It's a Friday on Scoops with DannyMac.com, and we're coming to you from the Lou Fuse Automotive Studios, and I love doing this. Ben Fred Fridays in just a moment. We'll hear from Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and this is presented by Hair Saloon for Men, Hotshot Sports Bar and Grill, Ryan Kelly, Schnucks, and again, we're coming to you from the Lou Fuse Automotive Studios. Hair Saloon's home base, founded in 1997. They now have 16 locations in St. Louis. I go there, take both my boys there, complimentary beverage, relaxing shampoo, hot towel and a mint, complimentary shoe shine, all that for $22. I get the perfect haircut. I am getting a little shaggy, so I'm going to head into Hair Saloon either this weekend or next week, and that's Hair Saloon for Men. Blues hockey coming up tonight. Join the party for all Blues games this season. 11 area locations, hat trick of savings, great food and drink specials available during every Blues game, beer specials, Jack Daniels cocktails, Blues sampler appetizers, the Blue Note bombs, and the all-new Golden Bread cocktail, only $5. All your friends are there. They'll be watching the Blues and the Avalanche tonight at Hotshot Sports Bar and Grill. Coming up, we visit with Ben Fredrickson. Ben Fred Fridays on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com.
Hi, I'm Ryan Kelly with TheHomeLoanExpert.com. There's never been a better time to look at a refinance. Maybe it's time to get rid of the PMI or get some cash out to pay off the credit cards. 5 minutes could save you $500 a month. TheHomeLoanExpert.com. Enjoy the podcast.
As I mentioned in the intro, it's one of my favorite portions of what we do on the website, ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, and a chance to visit with Ben Fredrickson of the Post-Dispatch. And if you're new to the website, what we do with Ben is kind of look back at the week that was, maybe what's happening tonight or today, and the weekend upcoming in the world of sports. Ben, as always, it's great to visit with you. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and looking ahead to what should be a busy day in sports, a busy night in sports, and a busy weekend here in St. Louis.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. And I know that you had a good Thanksgiving, but also a busy Thanksgiving, man. You have been you've been all over the place. I snuck away for a couple of days, and you've been working.
I've been working. It has been, but it's a labor of love, as you know. And you and I have been talking, I would say, probably the last 8 weeks, maybe 9 weeks, about what the importance of what MLS could mean in a stadium to St. Louis. And for folks that don't know, very passionate about this project, the Kavanaugh and Taylor families, and what they're trying to do and bring MLS to St. Louis. I think it's a win for the city and in how it's designed. And very simply, you know, they're trying to put what would be a $400 million investment if you include the expansion fee, $250 million stadium in St. Louis. And not a dime coming out of taxpayers' dollar, going on a blighted piece of land that hasn't drawn a penny since the mid-1960s. I just think it's a win-win. And to me, it's way, way more than soccer. It's beyond soccer. It could be a great win for St. Louis in progress, and that's why I'm behind it. And I'm assuming from a sports perspective, you're behind it because it's soccer. It's another professional team, but also as a civic look at what this could mean for the town, it looks to be a good, good deal for all those parties involved.
Yeah, I think, you know, and sometimes when we talk, just for the sake of argument, I'll try to play devil's advocate. And the thing about this plan, this proposal, is there's really not anything to plant your flag in as a devil's argument stance. You look at the land that's not being used, it's not generating any money for the city. You look at the ownership group, which is pouring private investment in, and they're going to handle the, you know, the stadium and the expansion fee, and plus it's an ownership group backed by families you can trust, and the Kavanaughs and the Taylors. They're the anti-Cronkies, if you will. They align with the, you know, with the Cardinals model, with the Blues model, people who actually care about the community and wanting to be here, wanting to do things the right way. All you have to do is look at their track record and see where their priorities are. And you also look at, you know, what the plan asks for. This is money that's going to be coming from people who attend the games, who support soccer, and they're going to have no problem paying some more taxes. This is not asking for city residents to pay for something that county, you know, residents are going to enjoy without paying. If you go to the games, you pay. That's the way it should be. And you also have, you know, the benefits of all kind of the all the things you mentioned of another place to go downtown, of another thing that draws folks in and stays and gets people in hotels and things of that nature. And more importantly, the reason that should happen is because St. Louis wants soccer, and it's a soccer hotbed. They feel like the league is growing. And I really do think, and I hope this isn't hyperbole, I think St. Louis could go from having no team to having a team with one of the most, you know, structurally sound and financially sound ownership groups in the league. I don't think that's too much of a stretch, and I don't think this is going to be some pet project expansion team where they're just wanting to have the team. I think they want to be competitive, and we know how St. Louis responds to teams that are competitive. We see the support for the Blues. We see the support for the Cardinals. This could be, you know, fit right into that family, and I think right now with what they have left to do, and what they've accomplished so far, it's about to be on the MLS doorstep, and it's time for them to come out and say, hey, St. Louis has done what we need to see, and we're excited about planting what could be our final expansion team here. I mean, and I think, too, I don't like to pump your gas too much, buddy. But you've played a big part in this, and you've, you know, your efforts to, you know, get the Kavanaugh interview for the podcast, for also, you know, your speech at the Board of Aldermen committee. I think you've done a good job of putting this into terms that the average Joe sports fan can understand. And sometimes that's the risk of what happens when they talk about these things, is people start hearing about, you know, taxes and land use development, and they kind of gloss over. And I think that you've done a good job of boiling this down to what you need to know. And I think it's resonated with a lot of people.
I appreciate that very much. And I sincerely do appreciate that, because when I started hearing about this, Ben, and I don't know how involved you were with this, but for fans that are listening, you know, I did a podcast, and people ask me all the time, you know, why did you get involved? You're a baseball guy. And let me make this clear. I like soccer. I don't love it. My kids love it. I mean, they love it, and their friends love it, and they all play it, and they play it at a high level. And we went to the games down at Busch Stadium, and I really enjoyed those. Those are fun, and I enjoyed it, and it was like really intense and on the edge of your seat stuff. I found myself enjoying it more than I thought I would. But I did a podcast with Taylor Twellman, and it just went viral. And it what it told me was that, as you know, with podcasts and whatnot, it seems to be a younger generation of people that are probably gravitating towards that. I think when you do your podcast with Derek or with Dave Matter, and you're talking baseball in Mizzou, you're getting younger fans. Maybe is that a That's not a stretch, right? You think?
No, I think yeah. I think a lot of people are using that as their commute or their, you know, their entertainment while
sure.
they're at work, even. But it does reach a different demographic, and it reaches a demographic that is very interested in soccer.
And that was the thing that caught my attention, you know, a couple of months ago. And so, the background on this was when I talked then to Taylor with text messages or on the phone, and he's saying, hey, it's $250 million in private investment with no ask from the public. I thought, that can't make sense. And then I started doing a lot, and I mean a lot of digging on this project, looking for, you know, well, what's the magic bullet, right? There's got to be something to this. What's the catch? And I didn't find it. Now, I understand that these next couple of weeks are very important, as you talked about, with the MLS and the presentation and what happens now. And just because it gets passed through the Board of Aldermen, which we anticipate today, and that doesn't make it law, which we should also point out.
Right.
It's just that their support is there. And that means the BOA is there, Board of Aldermen, the mayor and Governor Parsons, the ducks are lining up, if you will. But you know, there's going to be a lot of people, because on the heels of Stan Kroenke and the awful lease that was signed with the Rams, there's going to be a lot of talk about a lease, and I think that's valid. There's going to be talk about who owns a stadium and property tax and all those different things. But the point that I think that we always have to hammer home, and I think this is maybe the point you're making about me, it's a blighted piece of land, hasn't drawn a cent of tax dollars since the mid-1960s, these people are willing to build it for $250 million. And if you don't want any part of it, don't worry about it. You don't have to. But if you go to a game, that's the only part that's going to be taxed is on your ticket, which then will go to a portion of it, the coffers of found money, essentially, into the city. And That, to me, is really important, and that's the part. And you can get into the nitpicky of stuff and how it works and where does that go and this go, but that's the point, in my opinion, that needs to be shown. And we travel for a living, and that was part of my speech. We see other cities growing and progress, and if we want to have progress in St. Louis, this is, take soccer out of the equation, this is progress, and this is done in a very quasi-philanthropic way by the Taylor Cavanaugh group, and I applaud them for it, and I think we need to get behind it, and that's why I was so passionate about this and still am.
Well, a couple things and to point out, too, and to add to your point is this. There doesn't seem to be any sort of discussion or debate about any sort of breaks that come to businesses when they come to downtown St. Louis.
Absolutely.
We talk about the development going on in downtown St. Louis, and there is a lot. So I don't like saying that soccer is the only thing that is going on, because it's not. That's not true. There are other things going on, but they don't ever seem to run into any sort of resistance when it comes to, you know, things that lure them to downtown St. Louis. I talked to a business owner, a restaurant owner in downtown St. Louis, who's very excited about the promise of soccer and the crowds that it could bring, and he's looking at the other events and how his restaurant could be filled, and he's saying, you know, no one ever talks about the subsidies and the things that are given to these hotels that are popping up downtown. But what is drawing people to these hotels other than Cardinals games and Blues games right now? You have concerts, which are at those venues. But other than that, what is happening down here that's going to get people in our hotels and going to get people in our restaurants? Soccer adds people in that capacity. The other thing, too, is for everyone who says there are other things the city needs to worry about, I agree with that statement, but I also don't see anybody who's proposing any sort of plan that solves those issues at this moment. But I do see a soccer ownership group that's saying, we want to come here, we want to be here, we want to have civic engagement, we want to have relationships with inner city youth, we want to try to promote good things in the area. You can't just sit around and say, well, we should fix the potholes in the roads and we should cut back on crime. That doesn't have anything to do with this project that's going on right now. And in fact, you could argue that this project will help that.
Absolutely.
You know what happens when you get more people downtown? You have to have a safer downtown. You have to have people who want to, you know, be invested in making that area better, who want to be there. You can't have people, you know, you're not going to convince people to improve things downtown if no one's downtown. So getting people down there is a part of this process. So I get a kick out of people who say, well, you know, this tax money is going to go here and here and here. Well, without this team, without soccer, none of that money exists. You're not taking money out of the education fund, out of the police fund to build soccer. You're bringing money in by having soccer. And if you don't have soccer, then the money doesn't exist. So the whole thing about tax money going to where it shouldn't, it doesn't mesh with what's actually happening. And this is such a big difference from the first plan that came around. And the reason it's different is because the Taylor family stepped up and said, we'll make this primarily privately funded. And that changed the ballgame for me personally, because I had a hard time before asking city voters and city taxpayers to pay for something that was, you know, going to be used by folks not always in the city. And this doesn't do that. This is a different, better plan. And I really, as I said, I have a hard time coming up with reasons to push back against it.
I think you make very, very valid points. I thought what was really interesting, and I know that you had the chance to visit with Carolyn Kendall Betts, and obviously I've gotten the chance to know her a little bit through interviews and talking with her and background on the project, so I was as educated as I could be before I really put my neck out there in a way. And the thing that struck me the other day at the Board of Aldermen, and I'm not sure fans, and they shouldn't understand this. I mean, who, you know, if you're in city politics, you would, but she put herself out there. She's the owner. She's the face of the franchise in a way, along with Jim Cavanaugh. But she was there to answer any questions and also present the project. And that rarely, if ever, happens. You know, usually it's the lawyers or those that are associated with the project that will say, well, I have, you know, part A of, you know, 70 different parts of this, and let me tell you about that. And this is part B, and this guy's C, D, E, and F. And she would stand up, and they would say, I have a question, you know, Carolyn, can you address? And she'd say yes. Or if she didn't know, she'd say, well, you know, theoretically, this is what we'd like to do. Or that's a hypothetical, but however, if we can, this is what we'd like to do. Or mm-hmm. No, we can't. You know, she was very, what I thought, in my opinion, I thought she was very forthright in her answers and presented just an honest, you know, I don't know what the right way to put it, but it was polished, but yet just a feeling of someone that is caring and saying, look, here's what we're trying to do. And I know you have questions, and I'm trying to answer them the best I can and honestly as I can and forthright. And for her to be there and present that, that took some guts. And that's not an easy thing to do. And I told her that afterwards as I thanked her for everything she's doing for the city and her family. And that really stuck out to me. I don't know if people really picked up on that.
Well, I think she has done a very good job of putting an approachable, friendly face on this movement. And that's something that, when people don't know what's going on and when people aren't hearing questions that are answered, they start to almost assume worst-case scenario. They start to assume shady dealings or they're trying to hide something. And I think this group has done a good job of getting out and saying, look, ask us questions. You know, we want to explain this. We want to make sure people understand. We know not everyone will agree, but that's okay. But here's the way we're thinking. Here's what we can't answer. Here's what we can't. Here's the way we see this. And I really think that committee, and I wish I could have been there. I was out of town, but following it from afar, it seemed to me that everybody who had questions or issues was able to speak and get those either questions either answered without a doubt or get a feel for how they will be answered when they need to be answered. And that, to me, is the biggest difference between this go-around and the last one. The last go-around felt rushed. It felt like it was, it was almost like a threat. Like, if you don't do it, then it's not happening. And that could be the case with this, but that's not the approach they're taking, and I think that's wise. Because they're saying, look, we need to get this done. We need to move quickly, but we also want to make sure that everybody understands and everybody's on board. And I think you're seeing a better response to it because of that approach and because it's a better plan.
Hey, St. Louis, Dan McLaughlin here. This month, you'll start to see Schnucks stores popping up all over the city. Living in St. Louis, you know Schnucks is committed to the communities they serve. Now, there will be 19 new Schnucks stores in neighborhoods all around town. You'll also notice that prices are falling, and your points will be piling up with the Schnucks Rewards app. So check out a new store near you. Come say hello. Visit schnucks.com for the full list of new stores. See you at Schnucks. While I have you, let's switch gears. We'll do some quick hitters here. The Blues are in Colorado tonight. How would you sum up what's going on with the St. Louis Blues in 2018-19 in this season? It has been odd.
Well, it's worse than odd. It's disastrous. And I don't know that it makes much sense for us to sit here and talk about what line combination or what no-name goalie the Blues could trade to make this better. I was looking up some stuff last night, and this surprised me, but the Blues are dangerously close to ruining their shot at the postseason by the time December starts. And that's hard to do. I looked it up last night. There's only been three teams. So the league expanded to 30 teams, as in 2000-2001 season, right? It's at 31 now, but that was the last round of expansion, the big one. And since then, so that's 17 seasons, there have been three teams in 17 seasons that have had a points percentage as low or lower than the Blues and made the postseason. We're talking about three teams in 17 seasons that have been this bad through November and found a way to get into the postseason. None of those teams won one playoff series. So I guess if you're optimistic, you can say the Blues have a chance to make history. But I don't know, watching this team, if you see any sign of resiliency that proves they're going to be the fourth team to do this. They have an unprecedented ability to go out there, to lose a game, and to come in and talk about a lack of effort. And I've never seen a professional team like this, where talking openly and candidly about not trying hard is such an okay thing to do. I mean, usually that's like accusing a team of not trying its hardest. You might as well, put a target on your forehead in the locker room when you go in after the game. I mean, that's right. Kind of something you don't do. But these guys do it to themselves, like, all the time. It's really weird. It makes you wonder about the leadership on the team. It makes you wonder how many of these guys are going to be around as the season progresses in this offseason. But right now, it's fair to ask those questions and not how do they get back into this thing, because what have we seen that suggests that they can?
Couldn't agree more. And you're right. I was doing some of the numbers the other day, and it's dangerously close. I would say by Christmas, you could be out of it. And at that point, then, it goes probably squarely on the shoulders, in my opinion, of Doug Armstrong. And you got to say, all right, Doug, you got the long-term deal. This is your team. You're maxed out to the cap, which I applaud the ownership for doing. And, you made the investment in the team, but it's tough in a cap world, trying to do to trade contracts. At what point do you say, we got to blow it up? and, you know, retool and try to do the best you can with these trades. But, you know, you can't just keep rolling out the same lineup and the same team. And that's something maybe we're you know, as a fan base and as a media, probably heading towards.
Yeah, and I think when you have two coach firing press conferences where the GM puts the core of the team on blast and says our best players have to play better or they're going to be gone, and you know the core group of this team has eroded all of its accountability, and they've got to start from scratch. I mean, you can only have that threat so many times before you actually have to deliver it, and the way you deliver it is it's going to be painful. I mean, you're talking about a kind of a total rebuild type situation, really removing the deep-seated players on this team, even if it's at a loss. And that might not be a competitive team for some time. But if Army is the guy, I really don't know what other options he's going to have here. You can't fire the interim coach. I mean, that's not going to do it for you. Shockingly, the Blues have lost three of their four games after Mike Yeo was let go. So shocking news. He might not have been the problem.
Right.
They've got good players. They don't have any sort of chemistry, and they don't win any of the want-to battles. The other thing too, and this is solely on Doug Armstrong's shoulders, and it's not an easy thing to do, but he made the decision to come back into this season and trust Jake Allen. And anybody who'd watched this team knew that was a risk. Two times in the past two seasons, he had gone, you know, milk carton missing, and that creates stress on a team. You don't know if the guys don't know what goalie they're going to get sometimes with Jake. And the Blues went back to him. They said quiet the concerns about him. We're going to put a better team in front of him. Well, if you look at their stats through this point in the season, goaltending is still a huge issue. Now, it's not just on Jake. The defense is problematic. It's soft and allows too many goals, but it is, you know, your team starts at your goalie, and the Blues have once again had issues there, and it's something that they knew going into the season could be a problem no matter what they said. So now that you hear these reports and these rumors that Armstrong is out shopping for goalies, that is a tough thing for him to swallow, because that was the one part of this team that he did not look to improve.
You had an interesting piece on STL today talking about Josh Donaldson signing with the Braves, so that's one chip that is down and not available for the Cardinals. Where do they go from here? What do you think they do in terms of looking ahead to the winter meetings and maybe this week ahead?
Well, I think they, you know, I was trying to get a feel for in today's column and today's Post-Dispatch as to why everyone felt so freaked out by Josh Donaldson going to Atlanta. And I think, I don't know if you agree with this, but I'll bounce my theory off of you. I think what I came up with was that Josh Donaldson kind of felt like he was the realistic option. Like, you kind of felt like the Cardinals might try to get a Harper or a Goldschmidt, and that if they didn't succeed there, they could always kind of come back to a Josh Donaldson on a short-term deal and hope that he offered some upgrade to the lineup. And that, to me, in my eyes, would be more appealing than a guy like, you know, Mike Moustakas. I just thought there was more upside potentially with Donaldson if he was healthy. Well, now that kind of middle ground, that guy that could have been, everybody kind of said, okay, we see why they did this. Now he's off the books before winter meetings begin. I mean, Josh Donaldson wanted to be a Brave. The Braves wanted to have him. He bet on himself. They gave him the biggest one-year contract in the history of free agency at $23 million. And now Josh Donaldson is no longer an option. So it does feel like there's a little bit more of a gap between the Cardinals going big, whether it's, you know, a trade for Paul Goldschmidt or signing Bryce Harper, or doing something that is harder to make a splash, like adding a Mike Moustakas. So to me, it was kind of the elimination of some middle ground in some ways.
Lou Fuse, we are St. Louis.
It's happened. It's now open. Lou Fuse Jeep, Highway K, O'Fallon, Missouri. The first standalone ground-up Jeep store in the country. Largest Jeep inventory in St. Louis. If you want a Jeep, Lou Fuse Jeep is the place to go. 22 service bays, accessories, apparel, state-of-the-art facility. Lou Fuse Jeep, Highway K, O'Fallon, Missouri.
Lou Fuse, we are St. Louis.
What do you think they do, though? Do you think it's going to be an active winter meetings with 11 potential starters that they currently have? What do you think?
I think it is going to be active. I think it's going to be, you're going to hear people talk about why things are moving the way they're moving. One thing to keep in mind is that a lot of teams are dealing with manager hires and staff changes, because managers are changing jobs and front office guys are changing jobs. There's been a flurry of that this offseason, so that's going to maybe play a role in the timing of some things. But I do think the Cardinals are going to have to, you know, hit their ground running here. We're going to have to find out. There are a few things that I'm looking forward to about winter meetings, and I'm going to go to Las Vegas, so I'll be there with Derek Gould for the Post-Dispatch. Well, we're going to have to find out sooner or later what the Cardinals really think about Bryce Harper. If they're truly out, which they have pushed back against, but it has been reported that they are, we're going to know that soon enough. The other thing to me is can they come up with some sort of a right fit for a trade for Paul Goldschmidt? To me, Goldschmidt makes so much sense, and I think you agree with this, is he would fit very well here, and he would check a lot of the boxes the Cardinals need. The thing I wonder with him is, because he's a one-year rental, I don't know if the Cardinals could part with enough to please the Diamondbacks. They're going to have to get someone that gives up their franchise guy. The Cardinals are going to want to trade something that only guarantees they'll have Goldschmidt for a year, because they can't bank on a trade. They can't bake what they think it will take to get him to sign an extension into that trade, because that's not a guarantee. So, yeah, you hope he signs and you'd like to try to re-sign him, but you can't give up prospects with that hope in mind. The Cardinals have been burned on that, and they're not doing it anymore. So that's kind of where they stand with guys like Moustakas, with guys like Goldschmidt. I think he'd be a great fit, but I'm not sure if Arizona's going to want to trade him for what the Cardinals would be willing to offer. So I don't know. I mean, the big question is, can they get Goldschmidt? Are they really in on Harper? And if not there, then what is the other plan? Because at some point there might have to be a pivot. Or is there a sleeper candidate that they've identified via trade that we don't know is available that they could, you know, get for the middle of their order? To me, it's just hard for the Cardinals to come out and say, we need a middle of the order bat, and then not have one by the time next season starts. There's only so many guys who can fit that role.
No question. Two more things I want to ask you about. Barry Odom, we've been talking on the podcast. A couple of weeks ago, we said, wow, he's on the hot seat. Now we're saying, what a job he's done. I give credit where credit's due. He's done an incredible job. If Mizzou, let's just say, wins two of the games that they probably should have won in the final seconds, South Carolina and Kentucky, they'd go into a bowl game and potentially win that, and they finish up 11-2 and maybe go top 10 in the country. Number one, just the job that he's done, Mizzou as a whole, I guess, the season. And when do we find out, Ben, what bowl they may go to, and what are those bowls that they potentially could be going to?
Yeah, well, first off on Odom, yeah, I think a resilient coach is what Missouri has here, and his team responds like that. You can nitpick things and wonder why they didn't catch their momentum sooner. Certainly those losses to Kentucky and South Carolina are always going to be painful, but when you look at the grand scope of things, they weren't all that bad losses. Those were decent teams. And the big thing says Missouri's ranked 24th in the college football playoff rankings, which is exactly where Jim Sterk said he wanted this team to be. He wanted to have a top 25 team, and Missouri finished strong and found a way to get there. They beat a handful of bowl-eligible teams this season, something they did not do last season. They beat a ranked team this season, something they've never done under Barry Odom. This was, without a doubt, a step in the right direction for Odom. He's going to get some sort of a bump, some sort of an extension, and I don't know what exactly it will address. He would like to have more years, more money, and a better buyout, and more money for his assistants. I don't know if he's going to get all of those, but that's certainly the case that he'll want. He's not going to go to Louisville. He's not going to leave to go to another job. He wants to be at Mizzou. Mizzou wants to have him, and it's time to make him more competitively paid in the SEC. He's proven too much to be the lowest paid coach in the SEC. I don't think the Tigers are going to go hog wild, but they need to give him some more security there. As for the bowl game, the way I understand it is they basically are down to, and I know some fans aren't going to love this, but it seemed like it very well could be the Liberty Bowl, and that's because the Music City Bowl in Nashville seems to want Purdue. That's been reported, and they would probably try to avoid a Mizzou-Purdue matchup. So if it's the Liberty Bowl, that's in Memphis, drivable for the Tigers, probably a Big 12 opponent, or it is going to be a Big 12 opponent, Oklahoma State, maybe TCU, Baylor, which would be interesting because former athletics director Mac Rhodes is at Baylor. If Music City for some reason doesn't go Purdue, which has been reported, then you're looking at a Big 10 or ACC matchup. That's likely, you know, Wisconsin, Michigan State. They could also take an ACC team, maybe Boston College or Miami. But I think the best bet right now is the is the Liberty City Bowl in Memphis, and likely one of the Big 12 opponents there. Maybe Baylor, because that would be some bad blood there between Mizzou and Mac Rhodes.
I think it'd be kind of fun. I'd like to see another Big 12 matchup with Mizzou, but hey, that's me. I look forward to tomorrow. This is the final question for you. SLU and Butler. I think it's their first really, really good test. Now, I'm not saying Pitt and Seton Hall weren't good tests on the road. Anytime you go on the road and the kind of travel that SLU had to deal with, that's not easy. But this is going to be fun. Two 5-1 teams going head-to-head at Chaffetz. Should be packed. It's a whiteout, a blizzard, if you will, what they're calling it. And it should be rocking and take you back to where it was maybe, let's say, 3 or 4 years ago when they were highly competitive, 4 or 5 years ago, I should say. So I'm really looking forward to tomorrow.
Yeah, I think this has a chance to kind of set the tone for the season in some ways. SLU had a good win against Seton Hall, a close loss against Pitt. They've proven so far to be this team that kind of has a way of playing up to their opponents and playing down to some of the not-so-great opponents, but now they're starting to play better teams. And this has a chance to get things rocking at Chaffetz against Butler, and it could really, I think, be kind of a trendsetter for the team. They've looked like they had some growing pains early on, but they've been better as they've gotten better opponents. Now Butler's been pretty good too. They had a steady win over Florida. Their only loss so far is at 5 points against Dayton. They've beaten Ole Miss as well. They've taken down two SEC teams headed into this game. So I think it's going to be packed. I hope it is. It should be. There's nothing better going on in town than this game. And I'm excited to be there. And I think this could kind of be the game that really kind of begins the new era of SLU basketball. Maybe that's hyperbole, but I think it's a fair thing. If they go out and beat Butler, then that place is going to be rocking the rest of the season. They're going to have some big games there.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that assessment. Ben, as always, great stuff, and we will catch up again next Friday, and looking forward to what you have in the Post-Dispatch this weekend.
Sounds good, man. Talk soon.
Thanks, Ben.